It's Wrecking Ball Radio.
Shut up and entertain me.
There's no rules. There's no rules.
Holy sh! It's amazing.
I see her sarcasm and nastiness grow.
This is Davin's Den.
Good evening, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than the emergency room. You can join the chat room. Go to davincomedy.com, and I think it says live on air or something. It says something on the homepage. Homepage doesn't have much of anything else, so go there. Do that. I'm going to be in the chat room or you want to listen live. I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt. I am joined on the phone, in transit, Joe Curry. Hello, Joe. I am well. How are you?
Good, good. I guess a lot better than Dip right now.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. On the show, School of Fools, as the SATs try to even the playing field for test takers. A man can't enter a bar because of his religious headwear. A rugby player loses his contract over his religious beliefs. Should Chick-fil-A be allowed on government property with their anti-LGBTQ views? And we'll do some expressions from the 20th century that we no longer use. As Joe alluded to, we are without Pip. We were supposed to have Pip. Spoke to Pip on Friday. Said, what are you planning on doing? Because if she wasn't going to be here, I would have made alternative plans. She's like, no, I'm gonna come in. So we were all excited to welcome Pip back. Then I get a text around 4:30. Going to the hospital. Don't feel well. So then I get another text. Then I'm like, well, what's going on? You coming back? 5:30. Going to the ER. Heart pain. So we wish Pip the best.
Yeah, we're saying our prayers for her. You know, I hope she's okay. I'm kind of concerned, you know. I mean, if she would, you know, if she waited up to 4 o'clock, she must have been really feeling ill. You know, so I hope
it is Pip. It's not like we're surprised when we get a last-minute change of plans, Joe.
But it is, you know, with what she had done, it's, you know, kind of life or death, you know.
It is, which is why you know what you should do? Get a fucking second opinion.
All right, I told her she needs a second opinion.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and I will look down at all those so-called friends and family and go, none of you people backed me up. It's your fault she's dead. I hope you're happy. Thank you, good night. Yeah.
Highly recommended.
Who the fuck cares? Highly recommended. What the fuck does that mean? Highly recommended.
I'm just hypothetically saying, you know, if he said that, you know, I would think if, you know, you would want to find out every variable, because I tell you, a lot of times with doctors, a lot of them contradict themselves sometimes. Like, you know, what happened to me was very minor, but I had sort of like a discolor, like red spots on my foot. And I'm at my primary care doctor, And I go, is that from my diabetes? And he goes, yep, that's what it's from. Yep, yep, got to watch what you're doing. I go to my podiatrist, and I ask him the same question. And he goes, who told you that? I go, my regular GP. He goes, no. He goes, that's from the, as you get older, the blood flow goes down to the foot, and then it comes back up. But sometimes, you know, as you get older, the heart's not pumping as fast as it used to, and sometimes you get some blood deposits down there from the blood vessel. Because it's not, you know, whether you have diabetes or not, it has nothing to do with that. You know, so obviously it's not as, you know, crucial as GIP, but still.
Well, I mean,
you got to question these guys.
The wife had knee surgery 4 years ago, and the first doctor said, oh, yeah, you should just do rehab. Second doctor's like, are you insane? You have like a torn ACL. You need surgery. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, and I told the mother-in-law is staying with us, and I said, my co-host isn't coming in, and I said to the wife and to the mother-in-law, I go, she never got a second opinion. My wife freaks out. Are you kidding me? She never got a second opinion? But the mother-in-law goes, she's not Jewish, is she?
No.
As I said, no, and I brought that up on the show, too.
Yeah.
See, so for all you anti-Semites out there, you need us Jews. Remember that. Jews make you healthier.
Let me tell you something. I'm sure there are plenty anti-Semites. I hate Jews, except when I need surgery. First ones I call.
Not even for that. I mean, of course, but not even for that. A Jewish person will tell you, get a second opinion. I was the only one telling Pip to get a second opinion. I fucking flipped out like on two shows in a row. And now a third.
God forbid anything happens to me, I'm getting a second opinion.
Well, no, you want to get the second opinion before something happens, Joe.
Well, you know.
I mean, once you're dead.
Have a procedure.
Once you're dead, I mean, how many morticians do we have to call in? I mean, he always looks like that. What do you want me to tell you?
And like I said, you're giving the eulogy, you and my friend Lenore.
That's fine.
So you can sit in a cloud and watch you two struggle to say something nice about me.
Yes, but you're smart enough to not come in here and go, yeah, no, I'm getting surgery. I just talked to one guy. Or you're smart enough not to fucking do that. But like, what are you, nuts?
Yeah, I guess if you go to a specialist and they recommend somebody, and, you know, I don't know if she did a research on the guy or whatever, and then it's whatever the health plan covers, and, you know, it's a whole...
Right, but the health plan covers more than one guy.
Yeah.
You know, you just get a second opinion. And, you know, just to go, hey, is this absolute... Listen, if I have to get surgery, I want every option available to me so I don't have to have surgery. It's dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she came home pretty quickly. She was home. They wanted to send her home that night. She's like, no, I'd rather stay. So she stayed.
That's the thing, too. They want to fill another bed really quickly. It's almost like a three-hour fuck hotel where they're trying to send in everybody else.
You just compared hospitals to a three-hour fuck hotel.
Yeah.
Well,
You got to go. No, we just had wine. We got to go. You know, so it's like, yeah, they want you out. And a lot of times you got to, you know, tell them, look, I don't feel I want to go. You know, medical is now, the healthcare profession now, they're overworked, they're overtired, you know, and it's like you got to watch everybody like a hawk, and, you know, and that's what it is. I mean, you and I are lucky in the sense that we haven't had anything major happen with us.
True.
Personally, you know, medical at the time. I mean, we're lucky with that. So, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe we don't know how you feel when the situation hits. When you need something major like that,
but we've had people in our lives.
Yeah, you know. But I would, you know, if the other option is curtains, you know, I would be, you know, I would want to make sure, you know, I have every option available.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you're going to cut me open, I want to know that this is the last choice, the last resort. But
right,
whatever. Hopefully, she just fucking, you know, ate too much bullshit and just has gas.
I hope so. I hope so too, man. I worry about. Like I said, I had when you texted me around 4:30, I got another text from a friend of mine, an old time friend. That one of my other old time friends just had a brain. I think he had like a growth on his brain, and they removed it. Was it successful? But now he's got to go to the doctor and have it looked at. And he's nervous because the doctor wants to talk to him. So, you know, it's. It's very, you know, you get to a certain age where life is getting very fragile, you know?
Yeah, because we're getting old.
Yeah, I know. That too.
That's what it is.
Yeah. that is what it is. You know, it's weird because, like, it's like a girl I went to high school with, you know, is on Facebook. She's going to become a grandmother, and I know a couple other people that are grandparents. You know, my boss at the day program, he's 2 years younger than me. He's a grand, you know, he's been a grandfather for a couple of years. So, you know, it gets to the point where you start realizing time goes by very quickly, and you start thinking in a different mindset. Like me, I'm starting to think, like, I went to my parents' grave at Easter, and I'm looking.
No, you didn't. You were with me.
Did I tell you that?
No, you were with me on Easter. We were driving home trying to find a tuna fish sandwich.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. It wasn't Easter. It was Mother's Day. I'm sorry. Oh. It was Mother's Day.
All right. Well, we were not looking for tuna fish together on Mother's Day.
No, I know. Yeah. Oh, that was one Easter to remember.
I swear to God, it was like a tuna sandwich. Tuna sandwiches were like hidden like fucking Easter eggs. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, they sure was. We hit every Subway like we were like bandits. Yeah. went on a spree trying to find a tuna sandwich.
So you went to your mom's grave.
Yeah, so anyway, I go to my parents' grave, and I'm there, and then I look at, there's a plot maybe about 20 feet over, and it's by a tree, and I go, this is nice. And I go, and it looks like nobody's here yet. I go, I think I'm going to inquire on this plot. I go, it looks nice because, you know, and my parents are right down the street, so if they start fighting, I can head over to my place. You know, so I'm like, just my look. So I'm actually, you know, I'm going to write, when I go back next time, I'm going to write down the plot number. I'm actually going to step in and see how much they get and what a payment plan is, you know.
Well, I mean, until you move in, you got a place to store some of your shit.
Yeah. Right now, if I dropped dead right now, I wouldn't have. Well, I guess Joanne would handle everything, you know, because technically we're
all right,
married,
so,
even though it's separated.
So you would be put in a dumpster, okay?
A dumpster. I hope I get a dumpster. I probably shoved at the curb. Yeah.
Big trash day. We're not taking him. He's recyclable.
Yeah, right.
Put him in the green bin.
Yeah, I had to sit there and rot another day because stupid put me out on a Wednesday, and they collect bodies on Thursday.
Let's be honest. Joanne's never fucking taken trash to the curb a day in her life. You're gonna fucking die alone. Nobody's gonna take you to the curb.
You want to know something? That's true. She wouldn't take garbage to the curb at gunpoint. She would just wait. It's garbage day. Yeah, all right, I get it. Are you gonna take out the garbage? I'm gonna wait for it to mosey on outside itself.
Yeah. So,
but I used to wait for the truck. I do it where I live now. I wait for the truck, you know, and I listen for the truck, you know, and then I know I have to get going. It was a couple of times at the old house I forgot the truck, and I had to throw the garbage in my car and chase them.
Oh, my God.
I jumped and hit the truck myself.
Ugh. Why don't you, at that point, you might as well just drive it to the dump.
Yeah, right? I should. But I don't like leaving it out at night because I don't want, like, critters and stuff getting in there, especially where I live now. Because I got the woods right behind me. The woods is, like, literally about 120 feet behind the street. And I've got deer back there. I saw a fox. I got, you know, pheasants. I got all sorts of things running around back there.
Your garbage isn't... Your trash is not that special. I got the same shit here. I don't think twice about it.
Okay.
You know what? Because there's other trash. So what makes you think that you're throwing out such good stuff? How much do you think a deer wants to eat Kraft macaroni and cheese? Residue.
I know. You know, but I wonder if there's a rat that, you know, is licking his chops getting in there, you know?
What do you think? It's fucking Templeton from Charlotte's Web just camping out and your fucking garbage pail is the fair?
Let me tell you something. That rat that I had at my old house was sure like Templeton because he knew I couldn't catch him. And he was walking up to, I'm smoking a cigarette outside one night on my porch, and I see him walking up in the moonlight up the street like he's walking into his favorite restaurant because he knows I can't catch him and his goodies in the pail. Yeah, so, yeah.
You've been scarred by one audacious rat. That's it.
Oh, yeah. He hated me. I hated him. And he did everything to make me look like an asshole.
Was this rat's name Joanne?
Rat tail.
Was the rat named Joanne?
Yeah, Joanne used to scare the shit out of Joanne. Joanne used to bang in the door. She would knock on the door. And I'm like, why are you knocking on the door? Well, I don't know if the rat is in it. What do you think? He's indecent? And he's either in there or he's not.
Well, you don't want to sneak up on a rat. They'll bite you.
Oh, no. I caught him in the pail. He was jumping around the pail, and I was looking for something to whale him with, and then he got out in time. Yeah.
Well, they're very smart animals.
Yeah, yeah.
You not so much.
I was living a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Well, I don't know. So, domestic rats are very nice, I'm told.
Well, I saw a couple playing in the subway tracks when I was coming home from the club on Friday night.
Well, maybe your favorite mayor will bring some of them to the D.C. with him.
Yes. I'm like, whose rat tails are those? Whose rat tails are those?
When we have President de Blasio, he'll have the rat contingency.
Yeah.
So you were talking about aging. I started a new softball season.
You did?
I did. I missed the first game because it was a Tuesday and I was here. And I thought I was going to miss the second game, but fortunately my gig got canceled, so I was free on Friday night, as luck would have it.
Right.
So, but I'm still getting paid for the gig, so I in my mind, I'm now getting paid to play softball.
Oh, good.
I've turned pro.
What happened to the gig? Nobody came or anything like that?
I guess. I don't know. I wasn't in charge.
Hey, you got paid. What do you care?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would have liked to have done the show, obviously, but it is what
it
is.
I know. That's what we do. Yeah, I know. You know, because you get yourself in that headspace to do a gig. You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, a gig. But, and when it gets, canceled, it's like it takes the wind out of your sails.
Yeah. So, usually before I play a game, like before I start my season, I'll get some practice in. You know, there'll be some practices. I couldn't make any of them. They got rained out. Usually I get to go to the batting cages. I wasn't expecting to play, so I didn't go to the batting cages. So this is the first time in, like, maybe ever where I had, like, nothing going on.
Right.
I hadn't picked up a glove or a bat since last August in the playoffs. But here's the good news, my friend. I am no longer in the senior league. That bothered me, that I was in the senior league. And I was in the senior league when I was less of a senior. But I felt very – I didn't like being in the senior league. But
nobody would.
No. But here's the bad news. I'm still playing with the same guys. They've just added some teams with 21-year-olds.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, I don't – yeah, that's going to be real interesting on some of these games.
You're moving. We're not spring chickens anymore. But how do you feel you're moving? I mean, you exercise every day. You know, I mean, it's not like you're getting, you know, you shouldn't be getting winded or anything like that. You should be in decent enough shape where you're exercising every day so you could keep up.
Right. But I'm not what I was when I was 21.
Yeah. Well, you know, nobody is. But if you, you know, If you keep yourself in shape, you could still run. I mean, the only thing that could slow you down, and knock on wood, I'm in front of a dashboard, but is like an injury. But if you keep yourself, you work out and you stretch and stuff like that, and get that way, then you should be okay.
Yeah, I mean, now I did get a lot less injured when I was young, and speed has always been my game. I'm still considered pretty fast. So before the game, I said, I want to get my first injury out of the way now, because it seems like every year I get injured. Like, I have calf injury, ankle injury, knee injury. It's always the right leg. And a lot of times it's like something just pops, which is not something the youth have to deal with, per se.
Yeah.
Although I guess they do, if you look at major leaguers and stuff. So,
sometimes, it does, and even, but you know what, like I said, I really don't play sports in school. But I have my, buddies that played sports in school. They got their injuries. And, we're talking about 18, when you're, like, invincible.
Yeah. So I stretched out. I did everything. So my second at-bat, I have two at-bats. My second at-bat, I hit a ground ball. Looks like it could be a double play because there was a run on first. I run very hard on my way to first base. And I hear something pop in my Achilles tendon.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So it's like I feel it. I continue. I make it all the way to first. I'm safe. I stay in the game. I wind up getting to third base in that at bat, because they made an error, so I went from first to third or something. But I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? An Achilles tendon? This is new. I don't even know how to work an Achilles. I don't even, like, you go, all right, you can stretch your calf and everything, stretch this, that. I don't even know how to stretch the Achilles tendon. So now that's fucking sore. I stayed in the game, but I'm like, wow, I should not have asked for my first injury.
You got it.
But I'm playing with some of these guys. Some of these guys. I mean, there's some younger than me. Some in better shape than me. But some of these guys are, you know, older and much more out of shape. They don't get fucking hurt.
Well, slow down. You know, I mean, do you know these guys? Have you played with them before?
Yeah, I've played with them before.
All right. You know, well, maybe they're lucky. Maybe they're, you know, maybe it's all their body structure, you know, how their body is, you know?
I guess.
I mean, at my age, I can hear my knees, you know, my knee pop. I mean, it's like, you know, even the stupidest thing, when we were on the road in Kentucky, I get up to put my pants on. I felt my back, like, go out.
That's right.
And I'm like, oh, great. And I, you know, I'm like, ah, my back is killing me. I'm like, all right, at least it isn't worse than it has been sometimes where I can't even stand up. You know, because, you know, part of the name of stand-up comedy is standing up.
Well, not everybody. Bill Cosby used to sit down. You could sit if you had to.
Yeah, well.
It's just frustrating because I'm...
Bill Cosby.
What?
I'm sorry. What do you got?
No, I was just going to say, it's just frustrating because you do all this... I'm doing all this working out and stretching, and it's like, it doesn't fucking make a difference. I'm just still breaking down. At 44, it's all going to shit.
Well, yeah. Hey, it could be worse. You know, like, take a look at Cespedes. Stupid sprained his ankle on his ranch.
Well, he's got more than a sprain.
Yeah. Oh, it's worse than a sprain. Well, he broke a bone. I
think he stepped in a hole or something.
Yeah. But nonetheless, the guy, you know, I mean, the guy is always injured. You know, I mean, I wish he was making his money to be injured.
Well, see, that's the thing. He's making millions of dollars. I'm not fucking making shit, and I still want to play.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I wouldn't read a book on proper conditioning for sports. Maybe you have, you know, just a proper warm-up to do. Because, you know, maybe, you know, something that a trainer might have posted online or something like that. That are certain exercises you could do before playing baseball.
Maybe. You know, I mean, I do stretch. I do a lot of this.
Using certain muscles.
I do a lot of the stuff I did when I played high school ball and everything. I'm stretching out. But, I mean, an Achilles tendon, are you fucking kidding me? From running.
Let me ask you a question. You mentioned you did things that you did in high school to warm up. Was that stuff you did on your own or stuff the coach recommended?
No, I mean, the coach would tell us what to do, and we did it.
Okay.
So now who the fuck knows what he knows? He's just a high school coach, but
well,
yeah.
You would figure he would, yeah, but still, you would figure, you know, he was, you know, back then, who knows? But, you know, basically these guys, you know, have a degree.
I don't know about that.
And, you know, have a degree and knows, you know, and know what their, you know, kind of conditioning you need to do.
I mean, I'm not running two laps around the whole field like I was in school, but I'm still running. I'm still doing sprints.
But do you run a little bit before you play?
Yeah.
To get the muscles warmed up.
Yeah, but it's a different thing. I think there's like certain like quick muscles that like that when you just like a burst of energy that
right.
You know, it's hard to practice for, I guess, because that seems to be it. When I have like that quick burst, shit breaks down. But oh well.
Right.
So
you just got to, and you know what the problem is. If you're playing, you know, part of the thing is hustle, you know, to the base. So if you go, I don't want to injure myself or it hurts, now you're going to be kind of, you know, not going at your full potential. And now the other guys are going to go, the guy's dogging it, you know, the guy's dogging it to the base. And we really can't use this guy, you know.
Yeah, I'm known for my hustle, so that would be weird. And I want to hustle.
Well, and that's the thing. Your biggest worry is, right, you know, you got these guys on the team that are 21, and now, you know, and your deal is, you know, hustling them to try, you know, making sure you're keeping up with everybody. And now you got an injury, and that, you know, and you're trying to get to base, and you're not moving as fast as you should. Yeah, now you got problems. You
well, there's nobody on my team that's 21. We're still old as fuck, but there's some of the teams we're playing. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, look, man, you know, it's like, if it's on your team and the guys, you know, around your age and stuff like that, it is what it is. You know, you're competing against guys your own age. You know what? If you're competing against 21-year-olds, you guys as a unit have to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, whatever. I just don't want to be injured all year. So what's going on with you?
I'm doing all right. You know, I'm trying to, like I said, I'm like worried about Pip. I'm worried about my friend Jim, you know. But it was good. I had a good show in the city on Saturday night at Governor's. It was fun. And then I wound up at the compound, and Anthony, Cumier, and I wound up singing karaoke and drinking until 5 in the morning.
Oh, that's like one of your favorite weekend activities.
Yeah, I know. But, things are going good. You know, nothing out of the ordinary, you know.
Well, that's unfortunate for the show.
Yeah. But you hung up. I see that Carucci had a retirement party.
Yeah, birthday/retirement party.
Oh, good. So, how was that?
It was good, you know. It's funny, like, he's not with his wife currently. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're always off again, on again. Everybody's like, oh, this, like, he's like, no, this is it. And he's like, nobody will say shit about her because they think she's going to be back. I'm like, she is going to be back. I go, you guys don't like each other, but you love each other. You guys are nuts. So,
yeah,
she'll be back.
This is a second marriage, right?
Yeah, I said something that really cheered him up, though. Because, you know, they started dating when she was 18.
I remember that.
And she's 38 now, so he was 36 at the time. I go, Rich, look on the bright side. You took her best years from her. And that put a big smile on his face. I go, no matter what happens, you won.
God, that sounds like Joanne. You took the best years on me. I'm like, you were in the gulag, stupid. You were living a life, you know. You were living a pretty nice life.
No, but you were taking the best years from each other. You were both young. He was already in his 30s. And, you know, he's with an 18-year-old and then kept her through 38. He fucking took it all. He ruined her.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So, good for Rich.
Yeah, I know. Not bad, you know. But let's see. You know, let's see what happens when he finds out how much it's costing to get a divorce.
I don't think they'll get divorced.
Yeah. Well, I hope not. You know, when I get up to the show, I'll talk to you off air. Two comic friends of ours is getting divorced. And I never saw it coming.
Really? That I know?
Yeah, you know.
Oh.
You know.
Okay.
But
ooh, gossip.
Yeah, but it was kind of a shock.
You know what? That's why, like, I don't judge. You never know what's going on in somebody's life. I don't say shit. You know, you do, you don't do. I don't fucking know. What do I know?
Well, you know, it's funny when, you know, you notice about, you know, you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. That I was at I was at a roast back in February, and one of my friends came up to me and. You know Mark Riccadonna?
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, Mark came up to me and he goes, I heard about you and Joanne. I go, I can't believe you guys are getting divorced. And I go, yeah. He goes, I never thought that. I never would have thought that. And I go, well, to tell you the truth, I go, one of the key moments that I decided I was getting divorced was actually sitting with you and your wife when, you know, your wife wanted to take a picture of Joanne. And she's sitting there taking a sweet time, and I yelled at her, and we got in a major league fight, and I decided right then and there, sitting at the table with you, and, you know, sitting at the table with you, that I'm done. I've had it, you know, so you never know. You never know.
Wow, that was really nice that you put all that on him and his wife. That was nice of you to
put No, I didn't put it on him and his wife, but it's like... You know, he was like, oh, I can't believe it. I go, you know, like I said, one of the moments was, one of the last straw moments was actually when I was sitting at the table at that wedding. You know, I was just deeply depressed. And I'm like, I am not happy. And I can't do this anymore. You know, so I think, you know, I looked at it like, at least with my marriage, you know, you try to do everything you can to save it. And, you know, you go to counseling, you do this and that and the other thing. But if one of the parties is not willing to do what it takes, you know, or doesn't want, you know, how much more can you do, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, it's a partnership. Both people have to be invested in it.
Yeah, really has to be a partnership.
That's what I just said.
And Joanne and I were Joanne was not a partner. She would. It just seemed that she would work against me with every step in the marriage. You know. You know, on a lot of things, like trying to keep that, you know, on household expenses, you know, and this, that, and the other thing, the chores and all this, you know, it just seemed that she would work against me, where it was not a good partnership, and that's the key thing.
So, I was working at a Catholic school for a fundraiser for 400 mostly senior Catholics. Mostly, right. I believe they were all white, if not all. 99.5% of them were white. So it's right in my demographic, right in my wheelhouse.
Right.
Had to be completely clean. So, but you know, I had a cancellation last minute gig. I'm going to take it. It's not my favorite gig to take, but I'm going to take it.
Right.
So I was up first. There was no real warm up. And that's not really a spot I'm used to these days. But, now, on these gigs, like I talked about last week, how like I'm kind of like a heel comic. But on these gigs, I have to be much nicer.
Oh yeah,
a lot more smiling. You really can't lash into them when they don't get shit.
Yeah.
You know the material. You know you really have to leave a lot of material that you'd like to do out of the show.
Uh-huh. And then sometimes you forget. And then you got to dive a joke into the ground because you're so used to your cadence that you're into the setup. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I can't do this joke.
Yep.
I got to dive it. Yeah.
So, here, I'll give you So I usually open, when I start with my material, I open with a Tiger Woods joke. And,
right.
And, like, the second line in that joke is, he didn't have a hole in one, he had a hole in everyone.
Right.
Really? You know, it's a little huddle, a huddle, who. They fucking groaned at that, some of them.
It's going to be a long night.
How? It's like, how is that even a groan? What are you even upset about?
You know why? Because you're doing the church thing, and even if, you know, people, and you'll notice this, people are afraid to laugh because they think other people will judge them in certain situations. If you're at the club, and you're doing a regulation show at the club, people are out to have a night out. And if they're at a table with their friends, they're friends because they like all sorts of stuff and they laugh at the same stuff. So, you know, who cares? But if you're doing a benefit, especially with teachers or, you know, a group or a church or something like that, people are afraid to laugh because they feel like they're going to be judged at what they're laughing at.
But how is that even something that's judge-worthy? I don't even understand.
Well, he put a hole in everybody, and that's sex, and that's wrong. I'm just saying, and I'm not damn.
I'll tell you what. For people who don't want to hear about it, they sure do like telling everybody what not to do with it.
Yeah, I know, but still, you know, like I said, you get that mentality, you know, where they're afraid because they're in, you know, they're in, it's a religious thing, and they're afraid, you know, afraid to laugh. At something that might be deemed inappropriate by the masses, so to speak, and like I said, I don't think it's. I'm not saying it's right, you know. I'm just saying how it is, you know. A simple joke like that, and then the problem with that joke, we both know our sets. That's the first joke out, and now you're like, oh, well, here we go. How long of a set? How long did you have to do?
I only had to do 20 minutes.
All right, you know it's. Right, you know, it's like.
I mean, I did fine. I got some applause breaks, but
yeah.
You know, it's just like they're just really sensitive, and it's like I really don't put up with that shit anymore. But in this situation, I kind of feel like I had to. So
you had to.
Yeah. So the headliner is a comic who's been doing it close to 40 years. When you get up here, I'll tell you who it is. In the 1980s, he had a lot of TV credits like Evening at the Improv, VH1 Comedy
right.
Spotlight, Johnny Carson. So, you know, he was very successful then. And now he does a lot of cruises and everything. So, I mean, he's had a very nice career. Good comic. His act mostly consists of some party jokes, airline material, getting old, and farting. You know, that type of act.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep, yep.
The audience is loving it. Loving it.
Yes.
Yes. it's a very safe act. It's, you know, it's very funny, you know, I guess. You know, somebody, I mean, comedy's not really, if you go to the clubs, stand-up comedy isn't really in that place with that material so much these days. But for this audience, you know, it scratched them right where they itched. He was doing great with it.
Yeah, because that's sort of the polarity you have to do.
Yeah.
It's like when the band used to play a biker party. You know, Born to Be Wild's in the set. And we're not doing mellow stuff. You know, and he's the perfect comic for that gig, because Cruise Lines is, that's the stuff you got to do at the early show. And if you're going to do the meet and greet and the clean stuff, I mean, you know, you do your dirty show at night, but that, you know, and these guys do a lot of time with a lot of that material, so he's, you know, he's the perfect guy to do it. Out of that context, you know, I mean, you and I aren't going to sit there and write that palaver. I mean, we're going to write on what affects us, how we feel on something, how do we react at something, you know?
Yes.
So on that one, you know, a guy like that, it's no big deal. Guys like us, we got to, you know, we have to sit with the set and alter it and change things around, you know?
So it's funny you mentioned the cruise ships. Like I said, he does a lot of cruise ships. He was telling me some stories. Like, he got in trouble. He did this party joke. This is kind of what it is. I don't remember exactly. It's like, who's the poorest person in America? And the punchline is, the Tooth Fairy and a trailer park in Kentucky. Okay. That's fine. Apparently there was a contingency from Kentucky at one of these shows, and they bitched. They actually wrote the cruise director how offended they were. So it just goes to show you.
Because here's the deal. Because people are so offended by everything. And the key thing is to have a great relationship with the cruise director, because the cruise directors will, you know, either make or break you.
Right.
You know, if they don't like you, you got problems. So if you have a cruise director that you've been, you know, you're his pal, you have a drink with him, answer the show, you've been working with him for years and years and years, it's going to be like a club owner that you've been working with for years and years and years. You go, hey, get a load of this. This is what they complained about. People are assholes. And, you know, you're fine, because he knows that it's just one moron out there, and you've always done the job. You've always been consistent, you know, and it's just something to laugh at over a drink, you know?
So after the show, people are coming up to him and telling him how great he is. You know, oh, funniest, my sides are hurt. You know, I mean, the guy had a great set. One person walked by me, wasn't talking to me, walked by me and said, the show got better as it went along. I said, hey, I'm right here. I hate that shit.
I know. Look, I get that too. You know, oh, you were hysterical. You knew where the bathroom was. You know, I know. You know, so it is. But it's also your spot. It's also the spot in the show.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
I wasn't upset. Listen, I'm doing a spot I'm not used to doing. There really wasn't a warm up. It's not my demographic. I know what it is. The fact that I got some applause breaks and I did well is you know, good enough. It's not the set I always have, but it was fine. But that's not the point of this story.
That's, you know, and that's all you ask at the end of the day.
So,
and I've done, you know, I've done church shows with you. I mean, I remember the one we did actually for Rich. For Rich.
Yeah.
And we both did fine. It was a nice crowd. We had a good time, you know. And you clean up the material. You gotta, you know, you'd be nice and all this other stuff. But that's what the gig is. We're professionals. You know, it's like that's what you know. You take the gig and you go into a situation. You know, it's funny today. One of the people at the day program, he asked me, he goes, what would you charge to do a private event? And I go, well, what for? And he goes, for a graduation party. I go, save your money. I go, save your money.
You're
I go,
funny.
Don't. I go, don't. I go, I'll tell you right now. For the first couple of minutes, it's kind of funny, but then it gets obtrusive, and you don't want it. Because, you know, I go, it's a gathering. People haven't seen each other in a while. It's a social situation. You want to talk. You want to mingle. You don't want some knucklehead up there telling dick jokes, you know. So, you know, save your money.
Well, that was good advice. I mean, I've done those gigs. I mean, they're not fun, but whatever.
Yeah.
You gave them good advice. Yeah. So here's the interesting thing. Here's the interesting thing about this story. So people are coming up to me. He comes up to me. He goes, I hate my act. He's being serious. He goes, I hate my act. It's so middle of the road. I'm like, and people are coming up to this guy and telling him how fucking great he is. And you know, and he's telling me how much he hated it. He hates it. He's telling me in the 1980s he's doing a bunch of Funny Bones, which is a major chain.
Right.
And he had a joke about the Iran-Contra scandal. Remember that shit with Oliver North and Ronald Reagan?
Yeah.
So he said it would divide the room. So he was working a lot of Funny Bones, but after that, he lost all of his bookings from them.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, here's this guy who was, you know, trying to do topical stuff at one point.
Right.
And now he's like, you know what? And he actually wrote me an email today. And here's what, which, you know, we just became Facebook friends. I met this guy a couple times. He forgot, though. But he goes, this is what he said to me. Hold on. Let me just find it. Bear with me. No, here it is. So here's what he said. He says, I greatly admire an artist who's compelled to speak the truth. I have made many concessions in my career, and although I justify most believing I had a family and wanted to survive, the fact is, I wish I had your courage. That's what he wrote to me.
Yeah, because but the thing about it is that on a cruise ship, you have to do that you know, that middle of the road, milky toast stuff. Okay, but the cruise ships pay well. You got a choice whether you could write, you know, from your soul and speak your voice, and you know, struggle along in the clubs, or do that milky toast stuff that you've been doing for years and years and years and make a decent living, you know? So when he works with a guy like you who speaks his mind, he's kind of envious of that because he can't, with his current, with his situation, he can't do material like that. He wants to do material like that. He'd love to write material like that, but he's in the confines of working the ships. He can't. And that's why when he works with a guy like you and it goes up there, yeah, he, you know, he's sitting there going, boy, I wish I could do what I think. You know, he wants to do what he thinks, not what he does, that, you know, not do stuff that's, you know, hokey-pokey, but it pays the bills. And that's the line we all walk.
Yeah.
You know?
We all make that choice. Really, we all make that choice. I just can't imagine doing this job and hating what I was talking about on stage. Because then what's left with this job?
But you look, you know, you do and you don't, because you're up there and going, what am I doing? But you look at, you know, a certain age and stuff like that, and you say, well, I could be sitting at a desk. I could be saying yes, sir, to somebody. You know, I could.
True.
But, you know, the other choices, well, don't work the ships. And now you got, let's hypothetically, he said to you, you know what, Davin, you're an inspiration. I'm not going to work the cruise ships anymore. I'm going to start working the clubs. Well, you know how the clubs are out there. And now he's got to go back at a certain age and then rework material that's kind of edgy and then work that. That's a losing proposition, you know?
Well, I told him this. You know, I wrote to him. I go, listen. I mean, I could tell that the creativity still burns within you. Now, a lot of these guys, they have those acts and the creativity doesn't burn. They haven't written anything in 30 years. They're happy doing what they're doing. They're getting paid and they don't want to write new shit. They don't want to talk about what's going on.
Right. And it served them well. So you can't sit there and go, well, you know what? The ships pay nice. But I'll tell you something about the ships. I was talking to one of our friends I was working with a couple of weeks ago. With the ships, they've got all these young kids coming in that will do the gig and do it, in, you know, a cut rate, and they're cutting, the, you know, doing it at a cut rate, and a lot of the vets that are doing the ships now are having a problem getting bookings because you got all these kids coming in, undercutting them. So the next question I asked, I said, well, the quality can't be there. I'm sure the cruise directors are complaining about this. He goes, they are, but the lines could give a shit less. Money's money. So, you know,
they're turning into the clubs.
Worry about, you know.
So this is the advice I gave him. I go, and this is unsolicited advice, but I mean, if he's telling me all this, I go, you know what? You know, then hit some, then, you know, work a couple minutes of stuff you want to talk about into when you're doing clubs, or, you know, or do it at a mic or something, you know, or go into the city and, you know, talk about some of the stuff you want to talk about. That way you get that rush that we all get, you know, that rush when you're doing something new or that's important to you and you're not sure how it's going to go when it hits. There's nothing better. It's fucking better than sex. It's amazing.
it's great when it goes. You know, it really is this thing, this idea you have that you have, and also the fun of working. You know, working a bit. You know, like there's a joke I do about the self-driving car, and the bit goes. A porn star filmed herself having sex in a self-driving car. And I go, well, you know, when you thought people couldn't fucking drive, they actually can. That gets a laugh. I think it's a cheap laugh. And there's a portion of it that I'm trying to expand and going in how great we think we are as a society with technology. And then when the first thing we do when we get something technologically advanced, what we want to do is fuck or kill with it. I really want to expand that. And actually, when I was at Anthony Cumia's, I was sitting there, we were talking about the joke and stuff like that. So I decided I like the premise of the joke. I'm going to keep doing the joke, doing that line, just to get the laugh, to keep it going, where I can start workshopping ideas into it, you know? But that's fun. I'm looking forward to that. When you go to the club, it gives you something to look forward to. As a, you know, the guy in the cruise, you can't get your shit like that.
Yeah, just be careful with that, because a lot of that... A lot of that path you're going down was done with the internet. You know, as soon as we get the internet, what do we do? Porn, you know?
Well, it kind of brought that up. You know, you kind of said that. You know, well, you know, and I go, yeah, you know, but I could maybe expand on the car end of it or something like that and not go that route.
Right.
But it's like, when we're talking about something we believe in, it's like, I believe there's something there. So the fun in that is working it. You know, working it to get it to where you think it should be, you know, and that's the fun part of the process, you know. As a cruise ship comes, you can't do that. You got to talk about luggage and this, that, and the other, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a nice paycheck, you know. So it's, you got to pick your poison.
Yeah.
I'm working on a cruise ship, but I don't have shit conditioned to that.
I told him, I go, listen, I don't judge comics who take less risk than me or take more risk than me. You know, everybody makes their own choices. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, it's hard, though, because, you know, I feel like Rome is burning and I want to say stuff. I guess he's not happy with the way politics are going right now. I guess he's not happy with President Trump. That was the gist I got of it. I didn't really delve too much into it with him.
Right.
But, you know, I get that. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about it, but you're afraid to listen. Most comics, you know, the places we play, which are not always the best places in the country, but the places we play do not want you stirring the audience up and dividing them.
Yeah.
But we're still doing it.
You see, that's the thing with the material, because that's the trick, and that's part of the excitement of it. Trying to do it and bringing everybody on board with it,
right?
You know, that's the trick of it, you know, and that's part of the process. And you know, I mean, we're afforded the opportunity we get to do stuff like that, you know, where you know, like I said, the guy, you do a church show, you got to edit your material, you got to do that. Him, he goes in, it's another day. You know, doesn't he have to bat an eyelash? Does the material? Great job, man! You're fantastic. Stuff, you know. Oh God, you were so good doing, you know, milk toasty pandering things. But the good thing about it is, he recognizes that, and it's, you know, which means he still cares about the craft and the art. Right. There are a lot of guys that just go do it and just could care less, you know.
But I don't know if that's good. I mean, as an artist, it's good, but then I think, God, he hates... I can't imagine doing this and hating what... I mean, there's jokes I have in my act that, you know, I'm like, really? But, you know, you have to keep them in. But doing my whole act and not really caring about what I'm talking about, can't imagine doing it. It would drive me nuts.
I couldn't do that either. And you want to know something? If you don't have... It's like... I'll give you an example. If you have a bit that you've done for, you know, years... And it's always tried and true. It gets to a point where you're doing it, and it's not working. It's not working as well as it used to. And the thing about it is, and it was, I read it somewhere, that the point about it is you get bored of it, and you're not delivering it with the conviction that you used to have.
Correct.
And because of that, because it's just a junk that you're calling off, it doesn't go as well, you know. And it's like, and they tell you, look, if you want to still do the bit, think about when you first did it. Maybe change it up, or you take a little bit of a risk, or changing it around, and you'll get that conviction back into the wording, and the bit will start to go again. So it's just amazing with things. That's why I get, and I know you do as well. You get so upset when you have these celebrities that decide, well, I'm going to go into comedy, like they're going to drive Uber. And it's like, it's a step down to do something. And, and we see a lot of them when they realize how tough it is to do. But it's an art. There's a lot to it. The way you place it, the material in your act, the material itself, working on it, the precise wording, there's a whole thing to it. And I get pissed off when you get people that don't realize it's an art. Half the problem is that anybody can tell a joke. Nobody can do a heart surgery. Nobody can. It can be an accountant. Nobody can fly a jet. But everybody can be a joke. And the perception is that comedy is easy. And I don't know, and I can walk up stage and be a comedian. When those people walk on stage and die and turn white and then leave after a minute and a half, you realize, not so much.
Are you almost here?
I'm almost at your exit. I'm probably about 20 minutes away.
Oh, all right.
I'm on 17 now. I'm almost at the your exit. So I'm probably about 10 minutes, maybe 10 to 12 minutes.
All right. I guess we'll talk about the comic strip now. I was going to wait till you got here, but I guess we'll talk about the comic strip now. So years ago, you know this. We did it together. In New York, there was a club, still is a club, called Comic Strip Live. And they would have auditions. And auditions are good. That way, it's a clear-cut way to find out how to get into a club. And what you would do is you would go down on a certain date. They probably had a couple times a year. I'd go down, then they would give you a day to return. And you would come back on that date, and you would do 5 minutes in front of not a lot of people. Is that correct?
Depended on the night. Depended on the night. I mean, it's like any other night at the club. Could be 12, could be 50. It depended on the night. But still, everything was on the line trying to get passed in this place. And I'll let you discuss the person that used to review us.
Yes. But now here's the thing about this. You might be brand new trying to do this audition, or you might be a comic like you and I were. We were already professionals at that point. People were already paying us for jokes.
Yeah. We were working clubs already.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'd already done Comedy Central at that point.
Right.
So, I was somebody. Nobody to this club, but as somebody, I was working. You were working. But
I was working a couple of the island clubs doing stuff. We were, I think, probably about five in, I would say.
So what year was this? We did it for a few years, you and I.
Oh, Christ. We met in 97. We met in 97. And then I would say probably around 2002, 2003.
All right, so
you guys from Jersey came in, my guys from the island came in. We all did it together.
All right, so 2003, I had already gotten Comedy Central, but yeah, we'd been doing it for a little while
around that time. So you had that credit,
So now here's the thing. So there was a woman there who I guess she fancied herself a comic. I don't know. I think her day job was something with the NBA. I don't know what it was, but I think, but that's what it was, right?
I don't know. All I know is she was a cunt.
well, aren't you just jumping ahead?
Yeah, sorry. I can't contain myself.
So the thing with this club was they wanted biographical material. What's biographical material? It'd be, for instance, Joe talking about his divorce. That's biographical material. Like, this just happened to me, blah, 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 with jokes in it. Joe talking about being raised by a single mom. That's biographical material. That's what they wanted. I was never really that type of comic. And they were trying – because they were trying to become the next place that was going to have the sitcom stars, because Jerry Seinfeld was very big at this time. So they thought, Well, we'll get these sitcom stars like Roseanne Barr and Grace from Grace Under Fire, whatever the hell that show was. That was a very big thing in the 90s, early 2000s. Sitcom star at comics. And they wanted comics in that mold, but you couldn't be too old or too male or too Jewish or too this or too that. Because, you know, they'll be like, well, we already have one of those. We have one of those.
Right.
So they wanted to put everybody into slots. That was their thing. So this woman hosted it. Not funny. Not funny at all. And so she would do a few minutes in front of the audience without getting any laughs. And then she would bring you up. Now, she wouldn't ask you, how would you like me to bring you up? She would just say something to the effect that this person has no self, has no worth at all, and you really need not pay attention to them, audience.
Let me tell you something. Saddam Hussein got dragged into court with a better intro than this broad would give you.
Well, he had more credits at that point than you did, Joe.
A little more known.
Yeah. I mean, guy's a special event, not for nothing. But so you're already nervous. You already know you're being judged. There may not be a lot of people, and you're going to get this shitty fucking intro. That's what it was. And then you would go up, you would do your 5 minutes, and then and she was only the first gatekeeper. I never got past her. You didn't either. And then
I never got past him. You used to argue with her about it too. I argued with her about it. I did. There was one night that I said, "Really?"
Well, hold on. I want to hear that. But hold on. Yeah. Let me tell the audience what happens. So after you do the set, after you've seen this woman who is not funny at all, after you see this woman pretty much run you down in front of the audience, then you got to go back and she judges you. Now, what happened?
Well, there was one night that I argued with her. Well, you know, you're not this. And you're not, I go, really? I did better than three of your house guys.
Uh-huh.
I go, I creamed three of your house guys. So I don't understand, you know. Well, you know. It's like, shut up.
So the last time I was there, she did this demeaning bullshit to people. I saw the way she was treating comics. I did my set. I did okay. And I just walked out. I didn't even fucking wait for her. I just walked out.
I got to interrupt. There was one night I was there. Now, look, I mean, I've had pretty much good sets, but there was one set that I wasn't having a good night, and then I started to do crowd work. So I get done, and she looks at me and waves me up. I just give her the high sign, and I walk out. I go, this nice old argument. Whatever you're going to say, if I have a fucking point. So I went home.
So I posted this story, and I'll get to the reason why I posted this story in a few minutes. But I posted this story online. I never mentioned this woman's name. Joe did earlier. It was followed by the word cunt, in case you missed it. But I didn't mention this person's name at all on my post on Facebook. Oh, my God. The amount of stories, the amount of people who fucking called her out by name and hate this woman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So much so, when we used to go in from the island, we would have the audition, whoever's auditioning that. We're in the car on the expressway heading into the city, and we're like, all right, man, here's the deal. She's going to say stuff, but don't let it get to you. Don't, all right, with making a pack, don't let it get to you. On the way home, fuck her, man. Yeah, fuck. Because she would piss you, even though we made the pack, it's like, all bets are off with half the shit she said that night, you know?
I think a big part of that was that we just had no respect for her.
Yes, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
Like,
and you want to know, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, go on.
No, you know, as a comic, there was one comic that, there was a club worked in the city when Ha was open. And there was a comic that I don't want to mention his name, but he was very nasty, and he was an asshole and had an attitude. And I'm there one night waiting for him to go on, and I'm like, I hope he bombs. I hope he bombs. Who is he to have this attitude? He went up and destroyed. So that moment, I'm like, all right, he's an asshole, but he walks the walk. You
right.
Know? He's got a mouth, but he can go up there, and he can do the job. And I had a lot more respect for him there than I did for this one here at the comic strip, because she sucked. She was awful. She's as funny as a fucking dock strike.
Well, this is a reason why, you know, because like I've been asked to be industry and to judge talent, and once in a while the booker will ask me, "Well, do you want to do a spot on the show?" And I'm like, "No, no, I don't," because God forbid I have a bad set. I mean, chances are at this point, I wouldn't. But God forbid I have a bad set, then they're looking at me like I looked at this woman. Who the fuck are you to tell me?
You know what? You've got a point. You've got a point. You've got a point, because basically you have the you know, you're there as, you know, as an experienced comic, and if you have a shit set, you just lost all credibility, all credibility. I've been a judge on a couple of the shows. I don't go up, you know. I go up and sit. I'm just a judge, you know. Joe Curry, he's a judge. Blah blah blah. I don't do talk. You know what? Even in a night like that, it's not my night.
Right.
It's your night. It's your guy's night. You know, and not to sit. You know, I'm going to judge. But look, we've all been there. I love the process. I love the business. I love the process. Always have. I'm enjoying myself. You know, we're all going to have a good time tonight, man. You know, and that's always been my attitude. I'm not going to go up just, you know, for that reason. I look like an asshole. I don't need anybody's help for that.
There was actually our favorite buddy, Bix, used to fucking go up on the shows where he was judging. And you know how that went.
Yeah.
So we just didn't respect this woman, and she was unnecessarily nasty. It's okay to, like, I have to give bad news, you know. Like, oh, you know, I don't think you're right for the room. You know, you got to work on this, that, the other thing. But you don't have to be nasty when you do it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you know, you try to be supportive. There was a girl that she was doing comedy maybe three times or something like that, and she was at Governor's one night a couple of weeks ago, and she went on. And when she came back in, you know, we were all trying to help her. It's like, and she did, you know, for the first couple of times, she did fine, but we were all like, you know, helping her out. Look, get the mic away from you. The first thing you do when you get on stage, get that mic out of the way, get into the thing. You have, your cadence is good. You didn't seem nervous. That's a plus. And just keep going. You know, we weren't sitting there. You know, and when she was on stage, we weren't, you know, goofing on her or anything. We were all sitting there discussing it. It's like, all right, first thing she does, she's got to get that mic stand out of the way. You know, we'll mention that to her when she gets back in. You know, and this and that. Yeah. So we all sat there, you know, as professionals, you know, trying to help somebody that has an interest in doing this. Because quite frankly, to get up on stage and in front of strangers and try to make them laugh is one of the most nerve-wracking and scariest things you ever want to do, for the simple reason that you've got the balls to cobble together 5 minutes and go up and do it. You've got my respect right off the bat, you know, and I wouldn't sit there and be a bitch and be judgmental about it.
Well, it was her job to judge, but...
yeah. No, but to judge, but I mean judgmental, but I mean to nurture.
Right.
Or give a suggestion.
Well, this...
Not to sit there like the Queen of Sheba, you know?
Well, this woman is out of the business now. But it was interesting to see people pile on my page about her and post exactly what they thought. I assure you, most of them did not do that while she was giving them their review. And these were some good comics, too. But it's like, okay. So, last week, I was at I had not been to the comic strip, lo those many years since I walked out after that audition. I just kind of wrote off the club, go, all right, this is what it is. It's fine. A buddy of mine was producing a show, 8 o'clock show, and I was doing a spot, and I did it my way, my material, my attitude, and it fucking went great, and it felt good.
Of course, because there was no stress on there.
Well, I mean, there's always a little stress.
Well, a little stress because you got, you know, that place has got so much, there was so much animosity with that place. When I was working at Broadway on Friday night, Charlie, the guy that was doing the booking the show, he asked me, because he also was doing a produce show at Governor's the next night in the small room, which I was in, and he goes, so which room do you like the best? And I go, I like McGuire's. It's more like my home club. I love all the clubs. And he goes, so why do you like McGuire's, you know, over the other clubs? And I thought about it, and I said, here's the deal. The main showroom is the main showroom. I love it. It's like my home, too. That's where I started. You know, my first set doing stand-up was at Governor's, you know, trying to do it for fresh. And it was, you know, and still it has that thing. It's the main room. The brokerage, Gary, who used to own the brokerage, used to make my life miserable and treat me like a piece of shit. Huh. McGuire's, when John ran it, you know, it was kind of loose the way he ran it, and it was the first place I headlined, so I have more of affinity. I go, I love all three clubs. They treat us great at all three clubs, but just before these guys owned it, these are the reasons, this is what I went through at these clubs, and this is the way I feel the way I do. So you still have those feelings from when you first started that, you know, actually, you know, lead into where you are now.
It's called your history.
Yeah, your history. So that's a good, you know, reason why you were a little bit nervous. Like I said, why I felt a certain way, you know, I feel a certain way about the three clubs on the island I worked, because there was, you know, time before these guys owned it that I felt, you know, a certain way working there. But, you know, I love it now, you know, but that those, you know, the, you know, those old feelings are still there.
So that was, it was just really, just really interesting to see how many people had the same experience we did with her.
All of us did. We all did.
I mean, she was like the butt of our jokes for a long time, you and I.
Butt of everybody's joke. All the island guys and the Jersey guys, you know, we all went in because basically around that time, you know, you guys out in Jersey were so cool. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to start, you know, bringing some of the island guys, and we started to do that at Grappa. So, you know, I was bringing guys into Grappa, you know, have them hook up with you and stuff like that. So now I've got, you know, all, you know, Darren Dillon, Eric Tataglione, you know, a couple of other guys, you know, they were coming in, and we were all going to the lottery together. We would get almost the same gates because we were standing online together. So we would go in together, regardless. You know, I could be there with Johnny Watson and Eric Tataglione, and Darren is there. I could, the next time I'm there with you and this, you know, this other guy. So we all of the two groups went through it together. So that's why you got so much of it. We all went through this shit together. You know, both Jersey camps and the Long Island camps. You know, we all went through it together. And the bottom line is that she was a bitch. She was nasty, you know, and she treated you like shit when you were there. When we have a guest spot, there's a guest spot at a club or something like that. I don't go, we have a guest spot tonight. I go, yeah, a guy's stopping in. He wants to do five, blah, blah, blah. Because you got to respect people. You got to respect people that get up and do this stuff. You don't treat them like you're there, you know, there. She's like, well, this audition a bitch. I'm working places you don't. Okay? Fuck you, you know?
Yeah. All right, you here?
I'm here. I'll be face to face with you in about 7 minutes.
All right, I'm gonna take a break. I'm gonna play some music, and then we'll come back, and Joe will be on in the studio with us. So on the break, we got new music from Chiaro Aldana with "Nothing to Hide" and Renowned with "Angels Among Us," and you can learn more about both of them at deucemusic.com.